It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
Okay. This is... I've worked long to figure out how to ask this to you.
Okay.
So that both you won't get a sense of where this is going, because I want a very candid answer,
mm-hmm.
but also that you won't take it in a weird-ass William direction that doesn't help me at all. So I think I've got it here.
Wow, that's
so,
a challenge. That is a big challenge.
No, I think I have had the proper level of narrow field for this. So here's my thing. So you are presumably in your home at the bathroom sink.
Yes.
And this probably isn't where you keep this stuff, but for whatever reason, your toothbrush, your tube of toothpaste. You use toothpaste?
Yes.
Yes. No, I that's not a weird question. I actually literally know people who are like baking soda and stuff like
that.
But so your tube of toothpaste is there, your toothbrush is there, the sink is there. Walk me through your procedure.
I don't have a medicine cabinet, so all of my stuff is sitting right on the sink.
All right, perfect then. All right, walk me through your procedure.
I have an electronic toothbrush, so I have to take the base of it.
Mm-hmm.
I keep the working part of it in a jar so it'll be clean. And
okay.
Whatever.
Okay.
So I take that out. I attach it. I rinse the whole thing for a while under hot water.
Okay. Because
I like the brush to be hot when I put it in my mouth for some reason. That's just
okay.
When I was growing up, it was always like that. Also, I think it helps sanitize it a little bit. The toothbrush, the electronic toothbrush is mostly just vibrates.
Right? Oh, yeah.
So I still, when I use it, I still kind of go in a circular motion and stuff like a regular toothbrush.
All right.
Do you want to know what parts of my mouth I specifically brush first,
well,
that kind of thing?
You skipped ahead.
Oh, I put the toothpaste on, of course.
You put the toothpaste on, and then you put it in your mouth and start doing
that's
your
right.
fitness. All right.
That's right.
All right.
Then I rinse it off and I do everything
so
back
to the
opposite.
This is a situation very similar, I think, to the whole standing up or sitting down to wipe your butt thing that we've addressed before. But this is about toothbrushing, so I don't think it will make you uncomfortable. In our house, I believe there are two forms. And in our house, we have one of each. Trish takes her toothbrush. She doesn't use hot water, but she runs it under the tap, puts the toothpaste on, and brush her teeth. As you do. I, my whole life, put the toothpaste on the brush, run it under the tap, and brush my teeth.
I've seen people do that.
I find this interesting. I've seen people do this a lot. It never occurred to me. I'm like, why? Who does what? In your case, there's the heat aspect.
Yeah, I like to heat it up.
The only explanation she gave me is that if you do it my way, you might rinse the toothpaste off. Which I will admit, if you're not careful with how you do it, I have had that happen to me before. In my head, you want to wet both the bristles and the toothpaste, so of course you do it that way. But I realize the bristles hold some water when you rinse it that way. So, in theory, I don't think I have issue with the way she does it.
Well,
but just my whole life, I've never done it that way.
The reason I rinse it first and then put the toothpaste on later is because there is another step that I kind of skipped was when I'm done rinsing.
This is a problem. You're lying to me.
When I'm done rinsing it, I shake the water out. The reason being because when there's water in the bristles, it puts water in my mouth.
Yes.
And it makes the toothpaste foam up too much.
Oh.
So it's like maybe it'll run out my
See,
mouth or something
like
that.
I feel like most of us feel without the addition of some sort of water, it doesn't foam enough. I do.
Oh.
The few times in my life where I've had to like do it without getting it wet. I'm like, it doesn't feel, it's not getting everywhere.
Yeah,
and stuff like that.
I've never rinsed the brush while the toothpaste is on it. I've just maybe not shaken it, the water out very much before I put it in my mouth. And it was always so much that, you know, maybe some will run out and fall on my shirt or something. So if the brush is drier, then it foams perfectly fine without it getting so foamy that it's, you know, running down my mouth.
I've never had too much foam. I've had that kind of stuff happen. To me, that's part of the cost of brushing your teeth. And I just lean over the sink the whole time. So if it foams out, it gets in the beard, but I'm rinsing afterwards. I rinse my mouth.
Yeah, yeah.
The one thing I've discovered, I have to rinse very carefully, or this side of right here, of this where the mustache meets the beard, gets toothpaste in it, and it stays there unless I'm careful to rinse it out. I don't know why. I don't know what the magic is of that spot. But sometimes if I'm too fast, later I'll be like, oh, crap, there's dry
toothpaste.
Yeah, that's
the same part of my mouth does that, too.
Yeah.
For some reason, when I'm brushing this side, toothpaste.
It's probably
will come
a right-handed, left-handed
maybe.
Deal or
yeah,
something.
Maybe.
But I find this interesting. And again, it's another one of those things because I never questioned it. I was just because I've never changed how I did it either. That has always been the way that I've done it. It's the same thing with the butt wiping. It's like the weird idea. These are personal things. So it doesn't really occur to you. Hopefully, your life is in such a position that you see more other people brush their teeth than you see other people wipe their butt. If not, my condolences. especially growing up, I didn't often see other people brush their teeth very much. And if I did, I certainly didn't really pay attention to it.
A lot of it
was when I got married, and so frequently we're both in there.
When I've seen people do it, I just assumed it's because it softens the toothpaste a little bit or makes everything wet. So it made sense to me, but it's not just something I wanted to do.
I'm starting to think I might do it the wrong way. But it's sufficient, so I don't believe I will change. But I'm starting to think that for the effect I think I'm going for, doing it the other way is probably better.
I don't know.
What do you do with your toothbrushing, on the blog, themagicaltalkinghat.com, and tell us. We won't read it, because we don't really care.
I brush for a long time, too. It's longer than 2 minutes.
I'm working on brushing more. I have recently changed how I approach. I'm much more about brushing my gums now than my teeth.
Yep.
And I think that's good.
Yep.
Of course, I haven't been to the dentist in almost 20 years, so...
It was that long between my I've been going for a while now, but there was a gap of about 20 years there, and they scraped for a long time.
Yeah.
On that first visit, but after it's been okay since, and I had to get that crown, remember? So
So welcome to the Magical Talking Hat podcast, the only podcast that will talk this long about toothbrushing and also not really care about toothbrushing.
No.
I'm Evil Tony.
And I'm Evil William.
We don't know what episode it is. Find out yourselves, you dink. I miss dink. I haven't called people a dink in a while. That is a good one.
Yeah, I guess.
Dink. You know the one I use a lot and I've been using recently? Slowbee, which I got from Homestar Runner.
Oh.
There was some time where he was saying somebody was slow and he's like, move. It was a strong bite. It's like, get moving, Slowbee. And so I don't even know.
Slowbee. Okay.
I also like to say, what are you doing? I love that one. That was eye-opening to me.
Because they're spelled the same.
Exactly. that was a great moment in my life where I was like, oh my God. All this time, we're literally writing out, that's what he was doing. What are you doing today? Oh my God, what are you doing? Like, that's wonderful. How did I not notice this for so long? I mean, doing, that's what I said, doing. I miss those guys. The problem is I miss the era when there's still some more stuff they could create. I don't think it would register the same for me anymore.
Probably not.
I miss discovering those guys. long pants. Everyday long pants.
I still say those like those all the time.
Those like those.
I say that all the time.
My most common excuse me now, weirdly, is pardon. I don't know why. But when I'm thinking about it, I will use excard on me.
Yeah.
Like, even if you were a dude, he would talk at you like you were a lady. Hello, Belindas. You're looking awfully precious today. Might I interest you in this canopies? I can't buy it for you. I need 69 cents.
I just don't know where they came up with that stuff.
Out of their twisted minds.
But
don't say garbage sale, because, like, that joke is just for moms. Only moms get to say that joke.
But how do some people just make stuff up off the top of their heads and it's hilarious, and other people do it and it's not funny at all?
I don't know. I'm one of the ones who makes up stuff and it's hilarious, so I can't tell you. Much of my employment, both in terms of my duties and in terms of my job security, is the reminders I write every 2 weeks to people about submitting their timesheets. People love them. It's insane. And the problem is I can't figure out what they love, because, like, the ones where I get a lot of compliments and the ones where I get very few and the rare ones where I get, like, nobody says anything about it, I can't figure out what the pattern is. Mm. The closest I've had is there's a very loose correlation with the ones that I spent time working on and that I personally really like don't land.
Mm.
The ones that I pulled out of my butt 2 minutes ago and just typed some crap out, they love them.
Hmm.
I don't know what it is, but... for those of you who are just joining us, this is a weird episode to join on. We're evil, so we don't really care. But there's a hat. It's magical in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. And folks somewhere, somehow... write into that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with little notes, comments, questions, topics, things like that. The hat, all on its own, magically transmogrifies those emails into little note cards with the information written on them that manifests physically within the hat itself. Some losers draw those note cards out of the hat, read them on the air, talk about them till they're bored, do that for about an hour, and that's their show. And when they can't do it, a cold, unkind multiverse makes us do it.
Mm-hmm.
So here we are. Cold, unfeeling multiverse.
That's how we are. The evil universe.
Mm-hmm.
Where everybody wears a goatee.
I feel like there is one good thing that came out of this. Up until we had to do this, I always wondered why we were specifically called the evil universe. I mean, I just thought we were the universe. We were all evil.
Yeah.
But it felt a little redundant, you know?
Oh, I see.
But now that I know there's this other loser universe, like, now I get it.
Now you get it.
It is weird that we are. Do you remember Dinosaurs, the TV show?
Yes.
There was a episode, because they did like 87 billion and change, and there was one episode, I think that was the episode where the sun ended up proving that the world was round.
Mm.
Because he starts questioning things.
Mm.
And one of the first things is, like, last year was 8,712,000,000, and then this year is 8,711,000,000. What are we counting down to? No, he eventually, it was considered blasphemy that he thought the earth was round, and he was convicted and sentenced to death, but he requested to choose his own form of death, and they said, sure, and he said, I want to be thrown off the edge of the world. And so they came and they got him, the executioners, and they started walking, and then you cut, and it's like 3 years later or something, and they came in the other door from the house, and they're like, oh, guess you were right, it is round, all right.
3 years?
I pulled that out of my mind. I don't remember. It was some time. It was not, like, immediately. But they didn't change any of the puppets or anything, so they were all the same age.
That was a weird show.
I feel like nowadays that's a big part of television for me, is the finesse with which you decide how much continuity to use. Because, like, as dramatic shows try and have complete continuity.
Yeah.
I mean, they frequently fail. But comedic shows or other sort of more surreal shows and things like that will have some... Atlanta's a great example. Like, some things seem to carry through, and other ones you're like, didn't we deal with this? And back in the day, there was just none. Mm. So, like, everybody would learn a lesson, and by the next episode, they had forgotten that lesson completely. But I always think it's interesting... There are some creators who play with that and find sort of a sweet spot where, like, you feel like things are continuing, but some stuff... The Simpsons has some of this. The Simpsons, I feel like, is the good meter stick for this because they've had to do 30 seasons, 600 and some episodes at this point, that all, in theory, take place in the same year because nobody gets older.
Right.
But they clearly don't, and, I mean... Even the characters, like, acknowledge that they don't. And they're Apu's whole situation. Like, so, Flanders couldn't have been married to Maud and she died and then dated some other people and then married Edna and then she died, like, all in the same year. Like, that, no.
Right.
Especially because we know that Edna Krabappel was Bart's teacher for his whole fourth grade year, except now she's gone. And so, like, yeah, it doesn't work, and yet sometimes they still hold it together. Sure. Now they're at the point where they make fun of themselves. So that's a weird thing now. There are episodes that make fun of the fact that The Simpsons is still going and has worn out its welcome and has been going on too long and just won't ever stop or whatever. From 20 years ago. There's an episode where they do... Troy McClure introduces three potential spin-offs to The Simpsons. Hmm. And it's a action detective show with Chief Wiggum and Principal Skinner in New Orleans, because they, like, move there. And there's a guest appearance by The Simpsons, of course. And then there's a sitcom... where Grandpa Simpson dies and his spirit gets caught up in a love testing machine in Moe's bar and hijinks ensue. Mm. And then there's essentially a variety show. Like it's like the Brady Family Hour or whatever, but it was The Simpsons. And then they replaced Lisa with somebody else because she didn't agree to do it again. Something like that. And then at the very end, they're like, for the actual, don't worry, we'll still have more. And they have this whole song about We'll Never Stop the Simpsons, and they're like, all these different things. Marriage after marriage after marriage, and all this stuff. And that was in, like, season 10.
Wow.
Which, admittedly, is a long time for a show.
Yeah.
But I'm like, yeah, that's a very old episode now. So that's weird. Yeah, I'm not saying anything of use. Let's draw a thing out of the thing.
When Simpsons first started... I was in college, and I would go over to a friend's house to watch it every Sunday.
Oh, really?
Yep.
I didn't know. Because my sister was also around that time, and consequently, she didn't see it. I'm discovering a common trend where shows that came to be and became popular while you were in college, you often aren't aware of.
Sure, because you're doing other stuff.
I kind of had that. Both Simpsons and the Friends, that's because this is both Seinfeld and Friends. I was kind of in there, and I mostly saw those in syndication only, stuff like that. But I was at the age that Simpsons started when I was not quite a teenager, and so by college, Simpsons was like the one show we all would agree we would sit down and watch in the lounges on Sunday nights. Mm. Because we were all just the perfect age for that, so.
Yeah, I would go over to my friend's house and watch it.
My sister, like, has never seen an episode.
Probably for the whole first season, we did that. And then that was it. I didn't watch it after that. Which, not because I didn't like it, but because I didn't have a television.
He wasn't friends with that guy anymore.
No, we were friends, but...
he didn't have a television.
I think the next year we graduated and stuff. I don't remember.
See if you can segue this into the... monologue at the end of Stand By Me.
No, this is this question is digested from Azure Talon.
All right then. Looks like there's still a lot of writing on there.
Yeah. Mark and Hal of We Got This. What is that?
I have no idea.
Okay. Are starting a new show where they ask listeners to send in questions. Are you worried they're chomping your flavor? Is that a thing the kids say?
I think it's a thing Azurdalen says.
Chomping your flavor?
It's like biting your style. Again, from Homestar Runner. Do you remember that?
No.
That was a thing in Teen Girl Squad.
No.
One of the guys was like D&D Steve or something, and then they had a different guy who was like video game Steve or whatever, and he was doing some similar things, and D&D Steve said, "Hey, man, quit biting my style."
I just don't know how they came up with all that stuff.
Teen Girl Squad, the teenage girls between 13 and 19. I have a crush on every boy.
Well,
I don't know who those people are.
I think the observation was once made that shows where people write in with questions have existed since the existence of shows.
Yes.
Radio shows.
Possibly before.
TV shows. Well, if you count newspaper columns, people writing in with questions.
No, I just mean like in the home.
Oh, yeah.
My listeners, you mean your children? Yes, they have to listen to me. I make them or I hit them if they don't. Do you have any questions? Why do you hate us? Because you don't listen. Next question.
No, but yeah, this is a thing that's... we didn't invent it or something.
It would be weird to find out we had competition out there.
I mean, if they're...
Because I feel like we're a niche podcast in that we have like 6 listeners.
If the people are riding a hat and they don't see them until they draw them out of the hat, that would be the same as what we're doing, and that would be weird.
Again, though, I would be perfectly willing to believe that they came up with that concept independently. I would not pursue sole ownership of that IP, as it were. I would not attempt to defend our trademark in that instance. But having just now heard of this ever... Yes, I am extremely worried about anyone chomping my flavor. I take my flavor very seriously. Very few people get to chomp it, and only by invitation. So.
Well, I don't have a flavor, so.
How you know?
How do I know?
Yeah.
Well, wouldn't I know?
How?
I don't know, I guess.
See?
How does a person know if they have a flavor or what their flavor is? Someone has to chomp it?
Or you can chomp it yourself, I think. I mean, you have to taste it. Flavor is tasted.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. So have you ever tasted yourself?
No.
We'll see. You could get somebody to do it for you. Again, they should only do it if you ask them.
Hmm.
I do not enjoy the idea of two guys I've never heard of not only just tasting my flavor, but chomping my flavor.
I'm going to guess that I don't have one. I'm pretty bland in every single other way.
I think it's more accurate to say you're going to hope you don't have one and never attempt to find out.
Okay, sure. But as I was saying, I'm bland in every single other way. I don't know why my flavor would also not be bland.
That is true. Metaphorically speaking, you have no flavor. Right. Therefore, literally, yeah.
Probably not.
Yeah.
But you're right. I'm not interested in finding out. Especially if chomping is involved.
Right?
Yeah.
That's a... I feel like my flavor is subtle and nuanced. Like, you have to swirl it around a little, aerate it, you know?
Okay.
There's top notes of cheese and coffee and, you know, lilacs. New mown hay here.
No idea what you're talking about.
This is wine tasting. Have you ever listened to professional wine tasters?
No.
Seriously, this is a thing. They're all like, oh, yeah, they get bits of... And a lot of times it's food. But not always. They're like, notes of dung in this, and oh, oak wood, and you know, like all sorts of stuff. Because so it's kind of like just the flavor palette.
Napoleon Dynamite when he drinks the milk and says, "This cow has been into an onion patch."
There are definite parallels. There are definite parallels there.
It's an FFA thing, and he's actually, you know, the judges know that happened, and they yeah. want to see if he'll guess that yep. it happened. He did.
He's got some skills.
Yeah, it's got some FFA skills.
So I watched this thing. In fact, you should check it out if you can on Amazon. I don't know if it's Prime eligible or not. It's Tales of the Unexplained.
Okay.
And what it basically is British Twilight Zone.
Okay.
It went on for a very long time. I don't think it is continuing, but it went on for like 8 or 9 years, starting in the late 70s. And it's these strange stories. But it started specifically as Roald Dahl stories and him introducing them.
I think I've heard of that, yeah.
As time went on, they started sticking in ones that weren't his, and he would still introduce them. And then eventually he sort of went away. And sometimes they would still be his, but they'd be like the different ones. I'm still in some early ones. But it's weird. Like, a lot of them aren't... Like, they're just suspenseful in that they move kind of slow and stuff. Like, but the example, because the wine tasting thing. So there's one where the whole story is there's this really good... wine aficionado, and in fact when we open he's on television and he's being interviewed by this guy and he's testing all these wines and stuff, and the television we're watching is in this home, and he's going to come to this home for dinner shortly after this, and it's because he's friends with the man of the house here. Mm-hmm. They are both wine fans.
Okay.
Although this guy is obviously a bigger thing, and he's got his wife, and he's got a daughter, and the daughter is probably about 18. She's very young adult. You get the sense she doesn't like this guy. He's kind of creepy. He's not even there yet, but you get that sense. And the big thing that comes up is every year they have a bet. Every year the father of the house presents the man with a bottle of unmarked wine. And he has to, by taste alone, scent and taste and everything alone, determine the exact year and the exact vineyard of it.
Hmm.
And every year he wins. Not Dad, the other guy.
Hmm.
And they bet some large amount of money. This year, Dad's sure he's going to beat him, though. He's confident in this. Anyway, the guy shows up. The guy's creepy as hell. He's a snob, also, but he's creepy as hell to the daughter. It's, like, really annoying and awful. And they're all having dinner, and he's obnoxious or whatever. And then we get down to the bet mm-hmm. at the end. And the guy's like, "I'm feeling very confident this year." And he's like, "I don't think you will." He's like, let's increase the bet. And the guy's like, "Oh, no, it's not." He's like, "No." And he eventually, a lot of back and forth. And eventually comes out, he says he'd be willing to put up his house.
Wow.
And the guy's like, "Which one?" Because he has two houses. Like, this one. He's like, "Whoa." He's like, "What am I supposed to put up?" And he says, "I want your daughter's hand in marriage if I win." And daughter's like, "Nope. No, thank you." But the dad's like, "Really?" He's like, "No. That's stupid and awful and shut up. You suck." And the guy's like, "Okay, I'll put up both my houses." And dad's like, "Okay, here's the thing. I know he's not going to get this one. And then you'll have two houses. Like, you really should do this." And she's like, "But he's gross and no." And she eventually, because it wouldn't be much of a story otherwise, she eventually is convinced
okay.
to do it. And then he does this very long thing in which he spot on identifies it. And everybody's like, and then the maid, who was in earlier, whatever, comes in and is like, "Here's your glasses, sir. You left them in the room on the cabinet in the place where the bottles had been kept earlier," that we find out. And then there's a tense moment, and then the guy runs like hell, and the father, like, chases after him. And that's the end of the story!
So something about the glasses being...
No, meaning he had checked out the wine earlier. He cheated.
Oh, he cheated.
Yeah, sorry, I may not have expressed it well, but it's very clear. She's saying, here's this thing for you, sir, that totally proves you were cheating earlier.
Okay.
These are the stories, and, like, that's the whole story. But sometimes they're weird and freaky, like a Twilight Zone episode. But there's other ones, like a woman is having an affair with this guy. She goes to visit her aunt periodically, but in truth, she's going to visit her boyfriend. And her boyfriend says, we have to end this. And she's like, oh, he's like, but here, have a nice fur coat as a gift. She's like, ooh, I love this. But then she's like, I can't just take it home. I can't be like, my aunt gave me this fur coat, because that'd be insane. So she gets this idea. She goes to the pawn shop, and she gets him to pawn it and give her a ticket, but don't write, like, what it is on it or anything. Mm-hmm. And they agree to that. It's sketchy, but they do it. And then she's like, when she goes home, she's like, oh, I visited my aunt. She's like, oh, I found this on the ground. This pawn ticket, I wonder what it is. It doesn't have a name or anything. I should go claim it. Maybe we found something cool. And the husband's like, I'll take care of it. She's like, okay. And then the next day, she shows up, and she's like, so what was it? He's like, oh, it was this. And he presents her with a stole that's, like, way skinnier and scrappy or whatever. And she's like, what the hell? And then she leaves. And as she's leaving, she sees his assistant. He's, like, a dentist wearing the fur coat. Mm. And that's the end of the story again, right there.
Mm.
So... Roald Dahl's a weird motherfucker. I always knew he was kind of a weird motherfucker. But he writes some weird stories, and they don't, to me, speak well of television. But I don't know. I find them compelling. The Britishness of it helps. Elaine Stritch was in two separate ones, and that's because during this time she was living in Britain. So she was in a lot of shows back then. Why did I bring this up?
I don't know.
Oh, the wine thing is what made me think of it. And also, the wine thing being some patented BS... And then I thought, hey, speaking of which, also the opening credits are the weirdest shit you've ever seen. Yeah, it's very weird. Yeah, so Chomping Flavor, bad. Excuse me, that was a big one. I woke up the cat. Seriously, his head was down and I did that and he was like, oh. All right, this is from Mark McKibben. What had been your favorite question asked of TMTH? Couple things here. I'm evil. My favorite question was the one I didn't have to answer. But I will try and do my best to channel good Tony for this one. And two, I love this question, not for its content, but because... of the exact word choosing here. Didn't say what has been your favorite question ever asked of TMTH. What had been your favorite question ever asked of TMTH? I interpret this in one of two possible ways.
Okay.
One, he expected this question not to be drawn until after the show was gone, which begs the question, who are we going to answer it to? But still. Or, and this is my favorite, he has the temerity... to just presume that now this is our favorite question. So, parenthetical before this. Before this awesome question that is clearly your favorite now, what had been your favorite question? Of course, it could also be a typo, but I prefer to think of it like that.
Okay. I have no idea.
Yeah, it's a terrible question because we've had so many.
And I don't remember any of them.
One stands out for me, and in that question... impacted my life in a positive way.
Oh.
And so that has to be my favorite. I don't know if it's accurate. It's the one that stands out. Which is funny because it was a terrible question.
Okay.
It was maybe Craig, I don't know. Somebody asked what our personal codes of honor were.
Well, that wasn't that long ago.
I don't think, well, we don't know because we're outside of time. Yeah, and I mean, that's also why I remember it. I don't remember the questions from, like, season
6 years ago, 7 years ago.
Not that we have seasons, but what the reason about that question is we both agreed we didn't have one. That didn't make sense to us or whatever. But it got us to basically answer about our life philosophies.
Sure.
And for shits and giggles, we talked about each other's first.
Mm-hmm.
And you said to me that you thought I... believed, was aware of, exploited, I don't remember, something along those lines. My mind was focused on the idea that things only have the meaning we choose to give them. And at the time, I remember, and I may have said out loud, I'm not sure that is my life philosophy, but I think that's what I want my life philosophy to be.
I do remember you saying something like that. Yeah.
And I was deadly serious. And since then, quite seriously, I have quite actively tried to make that my life philosophy. And I've been very conscious of this, and I've thought about this a lot, and I try and live my life thinking of that. Mm. I mean, I think we both settled on basically the golden rule was our thing, but I think that perspective, whether or not I had it before, I became aware of it now, and I very actively lean into that perspective. I think that's a wonderful perspective. I should say, because people are weird about this, they're like, how does law fit into this and stuff? And here's the thing. Perspective is everything has only the meaning that we give it. And we is whatever polity you are in.
Mm-hmm.
So if I think killing somebody isn't a crime, there's a whole bunch of people and some infrastructure around me that do. So it is meaningful as a crime. We could all as a society decide it was not meaningful as a crime, and then in our society, it would not be. Now, I can't understand. That would be a tricky society.
there are exceptions that we allow.
But there's a lot of things I get to decide how much meaning it has because it's personal to me.
That's right.
But the things in my day-to-day life, we kind of have to cooperatively decide what meaning. So even if I think it doesn't matter or I think it's really important, if the general populace with which I live does not also feel that way, it will not necessarily have the impact and consequences that match up with my viewing its meaning.
But I do think that these meanings are constructed in groups. I mean, I don't...
Generally.
Yeah, I don't...
There's a lot of very personal stuff that I can decide.
Sure, but...
And a lot of my takes on friendship and family and things like that, I feel are different from most folks.
Agreed.
And I choose to live that way, and I feel okay with that.
But we all start out by necessity, because we have to grow up from infancy and learn how to, you know, language and things like that. We all start out with a template that is the milieu that we're raised in.
Yes. And to a large extent, what our parents have told us has meaning, but also what we get from our, as you say, milieu, our environment.
That's right. And we kind of have to realize as we get older that, oh, I thought I had the same idea about this as my parents, but I don't really. I have
a
very different
idea. And that's a major milestone in a lot of people.
And then either you align your idea more with what you think they actually think, or you continue to make your idea different from what they think. And that opens a whole door of, now I have to examine everything I think or feel or how I respond to things and understand, is the meaning I'm giving this something that I've picked up from the things around me and how I was raised, my friends, whatever? Or did I come up with this idea all by myself somewhere in a dark room? And usually it doesn't work that way. You don't come up with them by yourself in the dark room. But certainly after you reach a certain age, you can take the time to sit alone and decide and come up sometimes even with novel meanings on your own. So we all kind of start in a place where we're sort of just taking in whatever corporate or negotiated meanings that are around us. But we do have to realize at some point that those are pretty much made up. They're made up by that group or by certain individuals. And then we have the power to make them up ourselves also.
And I think if you're good parents, you keep that in mind. I'm very uncomfortable with, and also question the veracity of parents who teach their children, when it comes to religion, teach their children, this is the truth. As opposed to other parents I have seen, some of whom are sort of secular humanists, but some of whom have genuine, serious, devout religious beliefs, but say to their children, this is what we believe. As you grow older, you're going to have to figure out what you believe.
Yeah, when my stepkids, for lack of a better term, I guess, God kids at the time, I thought of them as my God kids, would ask me about religious or political or anything that involved opinions.
Yeah.
I always answered, well, there are some people who think this, and there are some people who think this. And I would actually only share my own opinion if they asked me, which they always did, always. Without any exception, they always asked me, well, what do you think? And then I would tell them, well, I think this, but I think this because of these things. And since this is a matter of opinion, this is something you one day will have to work out on your own.
Yeah.
But I also encourage them, even when you do that, even when someday you decide this is what you think, you need to remember that this is your opinion, not a fact,
yeah.
And that other people might have different opinions. In fact, I like to play a game with them in the car. We play lots of games, but one game we would play is fact or opinion, where I'd express some idea, and I'd try to get them to tell me if that was a fact or opinion. So they knew the difference.
Yeah.
Now that they're adults, I don't know how well that worked.
I can't remember if my parents did it or not, but I mean, that's how I ended up. And as a kid, I agreed with my parents on everything. Like, that was the thing. Right. Even when they would say, like, this is just how we believe, others don't. I think that tended to be how they viewed it. There was an implication that theirs was the right way, but they would acknowledge some people believe other things.
Sure.
And I always agreed with them, and it's funny, I remember it being a significant deal. I don't remember exactly what it was. But the moment, I think, where there was a political thing where I was like, I don't agree with them, was huge for me.
That's a huge thing.
Equally huge, which weirdly came later than that, was the first time my parents, as near as I can tell, ever voted differently on something.
Compared to you?
No, compared to each other.
Oh, yeah.
They were always very politically in line.
Mm.
And I think I've talked about it on here before. The first thing ever, and it was physician-assisted suicide.
Mm.
Oregon had a ballot measure as to whether or not to make that legal. And one of them was in favor of it, and one of them was not in favor of it. And the one in favor of it had what I think are common explanations for that.
Sure.
And the one not in favor had a fervent belief that one can kill oneself via willpower if one really wants to. Because they had experienced things themselves in the medical profession that had convinced them this was true.
Mm.
And they felt that without the certainty required to be able to do that, it was too much of a risk to... Somebody can even believe they want to die, but if they don't want it bad enough that they can just make it happen...
Then they don't.
Then they don't really want to.
Interesting. That's very interesting.
Yeah.
That's very interesting.
I can't remember what position I was on at the time. I'm very in favor of physician-assisted suicide now. I'm very libertarian these days when it comes to the value of life.
Hmm.
Especially one's own life. If you want to ruin your life, as long as it's not ruining other people's, go nuts. Including if you want to end it. But, yeah. So, I mean, that was a very big thing to me back then. But... What you brought with this idea was even bigger for me, the fact that, like, not only an opinion about something, but the significance of something.
Yeah, right, that's right.
And that it is because we say it so.
Mm-hmm.
And often that is because of tradition.
Mm-hmm.
Often it's because there's direct impact in our lives. And
sure,
it, you
sure,
know,
sure.
Again, laws against murder and shit like that. Sure. I know why we all believe that's a good idea.
Right, right, right.
And I also agree with that.
Right.
But things that we hold sacred, I say in a very broad sense, sacred, or important tradition or whatever, is bullshit. Insofar as there's nothing definite about it. It's that way either because you want it to be that way or because you have been convinced it must be that way.
Sure, sure.
But it really never must be that way.
That's right. That's right.
That was very enlightening and liberating and also forced me to pay more attention to, like, okay, what is important to you? What is sacred to you? What things do you want to be of significance and what things do you not want to be of significance?
Because so much of human life is determined by what a person values.
Yeah.
And ultimately, when you're an adult, in some manner, you're choosing that. Even if you're just sort of going along blindly with whatever your family or whatever your tribe or whatever believed, at a certain age, you don't have to keep doing that.
No, but many people do.
So there's a voluntary aspect of it.
Absolutely.
And the thing you value ends up determining a lot of what you think, believe, how you perceive things, your confirmation biases, your whole logical framework. And all of that overrides most other considerations like genetics or anything else. And you're totally, it's totally made up, basically.
Yep.
And to me, that makes it more powerful, not less.
I would agree.
I find it really interesting when people want, well, no, I didn't determine this meaning, God did, or somehow the universe does, or something. To tie it to something immutable that they didn't choose,
yes.
I find, to me, that cheapens it and makes it less powerful and interesting.
Because at that point, you're just a vessel.
Right. But also, though, it's very clear to me the whole purpose of making those assertions is to control things.
Yeah.
And I don't see what the point of that is. I don't see what you gain. Because, first of all, you don't ever really control it. It's all in your head.
Yeah.
It's all an act. Just pretend that you control it. So why do you value this fake thing? See, but that's, again, it's all about what you value.
But there is the other side of the continuum here. I think that people who live or think in this way, sometimes not as in a way articulated quite as I said it, but in the same sort of thing. I ran into this a lot back when I did paganism. A lot of people, their version of paganism was self-admittedly this sort of patchwork thing they've created and stuff. And a lot of people try and do that with a lot of things, but I feel like some people sometimes basically, if something is challenging to them, they then say, I've decided it is not important to me. Because they're unwilling to deal with that.
That's interesting. Yeah.
Or I've also seen people who claim something is very important to them because they want their way, basically. You get the version of that a lot is, if we're going to go do this thing, I need these very specific requirements because it matters a lot to me.
Right.
And they may say that, they may even believe that, but in a lot of cases it's like, no, I just want things the way I want them. Well, so I say it's important. And the opposite is like, no, this isn't important to me. Well, because it was hard, because it was bringing me to conclusions I didn't like. Not that I thought were false, but that I didn't like.
Yeah.
And therefore...
Well, fear is a strong motivator. I was talking a second ago about people wanting to control things or to believe that the thing they believe in is tied to something bigger like God or the universe or whatever. A lot of times, I think, I was saying a second ago, I didn't really understand it because it's fake. I do understand, though, if what's motivating them to do that is because it makes them feel less fearful about something they're afraid of. It's still fake. It's still a little trick they're playing on themselves, right? It's a bit of denial. It's a bit of repression. But it works. It tricks them, and so they're convinced. So if they believe this lie, that what they believe comes from something else and not just from themselves, if they can just suppress the fact that they know the truth, which they do, they can sort of get through it. And you know they know the truth, because if you challenge the lie even a little bit, they'll get very upset.
Yes.
And which indicates that they know just as well as everybody else that it's a defense
mechanism.
This
I also find really dangerous, because if I believe that the truth or that meaning comes from outside of me, I can potentially be convinced that someone other than me is a bigger expert on that truth. Whereas if I know that meaning comes from me, you will never convince me that you're a better expert at what I believe and what I value than I am.
Yeah, right.
And that's the thing. If I want to believe... We keep going to religion. This applies to a lot of things. It's just really easy to apply it to religion.
Yes.
If I believe that God has determined a truth and it's what I believe, but I think it's because God told me to believe it or because God made me believe it or whatever, that's great. Unless somebody else is like, you know what? I have a better line to God.
Yeah, that's right.
And so they sort of hijack. They get to dictate, I have to value what they value because they've convinced me that the source of truth told them or that they understand it better.
Right,
but if it's like, I've decided that I believe this, people can try and convince me not, but they can't say, I don't think you really get what you believe. I don't think you're believing it right.
Well, and also, even the concept of negotiated meaning, which again, I think most of the meanings We don't just come up with our own. We negotiate with our tribe or whatever.
Especially the practical and logistical ones.
Sure. We negotiate those things. That's still not the same as it being beyond us or, determined by some absolute thing. We can acknowledge that, just like we can acknowledge some meaning comes from our own individual subjective imaginations, we can understand that this meaning has emerged from the negotiation of these people, this tribe. It's not absolute. Another tribe can come up with something different. We may come up with something different 2 years from now, and that's okay.
And in a hilariously ironic twist, the vast majority of narratives, including religions, which true or not, they're narratives. They're stories. They may be true. I'm not saying all your religions are dumb. I think they are, but that's not what I'm saying. The vast majority of narratives, including basically every mythology and religion, involve a story of someone deciding that what collectively was the meaning is not the meaning for them. That's every story, is somebody who decided to be an individual, or who's somebody who discovered a new way. And in religions, it's literally everybody believed this, and then this person came along and said, that's not true, this is true, which is awesome. But now we're all saying, no, we all have to believe that's true. Well, what if I'm the guy who said, no, this is true? No. Right. This time we got it right, so we can stop. Yeah.
But meaning is important because I mean, there are facts, like the temperature the water boils at sea level, but that fact is irrelevant outside of what meaning we ascribe it. That means something to me because that's the temperature the water has to be before I put the pasta in, or that's meaningful to me because it is a scientific fact, but I'm inspired by the awe of nature and how precise it is, right? The meaning is the real thing. The fact is a fact. That's what it is. But until we put meaning around it, it doesn't literally mean anything to us.
It's why I used to get very inspired by math.
Oh, yeah.
I'd be like, we decided that this was a thing, but it's so elegant to us, and I find that fascinating. And yeah, I love that. Let me throw one at you that's been a big one that's been hitting me lately, because Trish and I don't necessarily agree on this one. I don't put a lot of meaning in family. And by family, I mean composite of two things. One, genetic relation, blood relation.
Sure.
And two, just to cover things, upbringing with someone or being raised by someone. So
being raised by someone
or raising someone. I mean, it's a two-way relationship.
Being a caregiver of children or being the child.
Or this is my great uncle, so I hardly know him, but we're family. But it also includes, I was adopted, but these people raised me. They're my family. Sure. I don't put a lot of stock in that there are certain social obligations, although very few of them, really. That I think are required. I would probably have to, at least very rarely, but like every once in a while, say something to my parents. Oh, I'd have let them know I'm still alive. Some sort of communication, probably. If I had a relative who really I felt had no other options and needed some sort of like financial support or something, I probably, if I was capable, would do something like that.
Sure.
But if I really didn't like my mother and my father and my sister and stuff, I wouldn't go out and visit them. A lot of people do that because they feel they have to. And to a certain degree, I feel an obligation, but it's because I like them as people.
Sure.
Now, to be fair, there's a huge correlation between people I spent a ton of formative years with and who helped mold me into the person I am, and people you like.
But there doesn't have to be.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And a lot of people are like, you might absolutely hate someone, but if they're family, they're certain, you got to back them up in certain ways, and you got to be there for. And I'm like, I don't think that is true for me.
For you, yeah.
And it's a big one. I have a friend who shall remain nameless, whose mother believes that God selected Donald Trump to be president.
Okay.
That's just the tip of the iceberg of this. But everything else you think a person like that would believe falls in line here.
Sure.
This person is very open-minded, independent, liberal-minded individual. Could not be less like this. And they still, like, call them periodically, go visit them at holidays, still try and tolerate. I genuinely believe if my parents espoused such a belief, I would cut them out of my life. I would disown them, essentially. Because I would not be able to understand how we could possibly have any meaningful interaction if they were so far afield in fundamental beliefs as that. I couldn't cope with that. And I feel like, I mean, it would be sad. I would hate it for so many reasons or whatever, but I'm like, I would be okay with me having made that decision. And this other person is like, I can't. They're my family. I love them. And I'm like, okay. I mean, I guess. But it's not.
Well,
to me, that's like, yeah, but they trigger a lot of nostalgia for me. Like, that's all I'm hearing.
But it could
that.
Be that. It could be that.
Which it could be.
And it could be a lot of other things that they're not really.
I'm not attempting to judge people for that position. What I'm saying is I definitely don't have that position.
Right.
And that is a thing that I have articulated largely since that question came up. And, it's very convenient for me to do. I genuinely like my family. I genuinely like my in-laws. So, like I said, Trish doesn't share this view. Nothing in our lives brings that into conflict. It is a wholly academic argument.
Right.
So that's convenient.
Sure, yeah.
But I do think that's how I feel now. And that was a big one to me because I feel like that's your... Societally speaking, you are not supposed to feel that way.
I suppose that's true.
I think our culture very much, I mean, other cultures even more so, but our culture, you know, family's important, whatever. And there are people that like to do family's very important, and you totally get to define who your family is. And I'm like, that's fine. Then we're just semantic here.
That's right.
And then the people that are my family, in quotes, I absolutely stand by them. And there are people like that. And honestly, my real family is like that for me.
Yeah.
But it's not because they're my real family.
Right.
So that was my favorite question. Although, I don't remember what the question was, but there was a question early on that led us to talk completely unrelated about that weird TV show where Tony Danza was teaching English in a real school.
Okay.
And so that was a cool question, because we got to talk about that.
I don't remember that at all.
Oh, yeah. No, A&E or somebody had a reality show where Tony Danza, because he technically had the degree, I think, went and taught English in some school for like a semester or something. Didn't see the show. Thought it was hilarious. I recently was watching an episode of a British panel show called Mock the Week that was from 2012. You are probably not familiar with a gentleman by the name of Boris Johnson.
I'm familiar with who he is.
Okay, yeah.
He was a politician, right?
Yes, he was a former mayor of London.
Mayor of London,
His one claim to fame is he came up with Boris bikes, which are kind of like zip bikes here that are around London, so you can like borrow
weird,
a bike.
Weird hair and
yes.
stuff.
Yeah, that's his one claim to fame. His claims to infamy are many and awful.
Because he was in favor of Brexit, I think.
Yes, and
stuff
he
like that.
Says terrible misogynist things, and he's an idiot.
He's like the British Trump kind of deal.
You're kind of spoiling my story here.
Okay.
So, this is in 2012, I'm watching this, and I think he was running again for Mayor of London, I don't know, something, he was in the news, and this show, Mock the Week, mocks the week's news. And somebody pointed out that he technically was born in the U.S., and therefore technically was eligible to become president. And their joke at the time was they'd way rather have him be the president of the U.S. than whatever he was there. But I was like, I'm from the future, and you laugh, we accidentally did this. Like, I mean, not him, but we pretty much elected Boris Johnson president of the United States.
So.
And that was just eerie to me. There's a bunch of stuff like that. This is some of the early days where they're starting to blame the EU, and they're making, you know, chest-thumping noises about referendum and all this, and it was years from happening, but I wanted to be like, no, but it does. This is a weird theory I've come up with recently. So, I'm a socialist, and I say I'm a socialist. There's a lot of reasons for it. But the real broad illustrative purposes of it is I like Western Europe. I feel that Western Europeans are more comfortable and relaxed as people. And I attribute a lot of this to the somewhat small levels of socialism they have. They are not wholly socialist nations, but they're somewhat socialist, such that, in my mind, people don't have to worry about a lot of basic necessities.
And like, so, like healthcare?
Yeah, that leads, and housing and stuff like that. And so that leads, you know, you just have an easier, calmer life that way when you know that kind of thing is there. And I was like, but the Brits have started going apeshit lately. And I'm like, but I've been hearing a lot of stories. British socialism is kind of falling apart right now. They're having a lot of issues with decreased benefits and people losing their pension money and healthcare getting worse and all this. And I'm like, wow, this might strengthen my argument. Because once the basic safety net started disappearing from the UK, they started freaking out about the foreigners and getting all uppity and all this stuff, and basically turning into shitty, slightly less shitty versions of us. So it is strengthening my belief in socialism. And the good news about that is that that's the end of our time and we can stop. And William's confused because I already said that once, because I hit, apparently if you hit the record button on accident, it pauses the recording, and then you can hit it again, and it keeps going.
Oh.
Which is weird, because there's also a pause button. But, you know, whatever. you are a superficial button that is not needed. I'm staring at the pause button. When we're in the evil universe, we mock buttons on screens.
Yep.
Anyway, listen again next time or not. We don't really care.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.